Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.
Hello everyone and welcome to Inside Track with me, Luke Allam. I am delighted to welcome a guy who knows a thing or two about good food. He also knows a thing or two about traveling the world. In fact, he spends about 250 nights of the year in a hotel just sampling great food. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Everyone knows you as No Garlic, No Onions.
Yep.
Because of your massive intolerance. Is that right? Or you just, you know what? It's a great name. I'll come up with it.
I wish God didn't create anyone perfect and he removed these two things of me.
Yeah.
So No Garlic, No Onions. It's a hard thing to have, especially enjoying Lebanese food,
Deeply ironic.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, it's one of the staples of the Lebanese diet. But
it is what it is. So yeah. I've never knew I was a No Garlic, No Onions guy until I met my wife. That in 2005, when she discovered that they're not good for me. And ever since I stopped them, my life changed in a million better ways. So I try to avoid garlic and onion and not asking people to stop using it. I'm not working on it or supporting that, but mainly on how to use it, why use it in a smooth, soft way, and how... I won't say they're bad for your health, but how hard they are for the body to digest, and we should not throw them away here and there. So
we're going to get into it. We're getting into a lot of things, especially the traveling part as well. I'm really interested to know about that. But I already know this is going to go very, very well because I love the mug that you have. Look at that, living the dream, living the brand, fully integrated into the culture of the show. Fantastic!
I love your show. It feels like I said, you know what? Let me get their mug today.
I love it. Look, we bumped into each other relatively recently at the expo at a day to help out the Lebanese. And I think what I love most about you in the short time I've got to know you is that you are one of the most passionate people about the country and the people and connecting people together. And it's great to connect with you. And I'm really happy to have you on the show. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
No garlic, no onions. So obviously people who know you well, and you've got a big following online. You obviously started as a dentist. You then became a photographer. Then you became a foodie, traveler, critique, you name it. So if I ask you the question, what do you do for a living? How what do you say?
You know what? I'll tell you, I've had the chance to give a talk on TEDx LAU back then, long time ago. And my talk was about being a multi-potentialite. And back then, I had 9 things to do. I was very happy doing them all. And maturity didn't reach a point where I understood that you cannot do a million things at the same time. And probably this is why one day I had to stop my clinic and one day I had to stop my professional photography career. So maturity teaches you that you cannot have 100 watermelon in your hands. So I had to focus on one thing, all based around my passion. I'm super passionate about people. I'm super passionate about food, restaurants, discoveries, travels. And it all relates, it all goes in the same basket where I wake up every day and say, okay, how many people I'm going to meet today? How many new things I'm going to learn today? How many smiles I'm going to draw today? And how many things I'm going to taste today? And it flows. I super love what I do. I understand what I do. I enjoy it. I never wake up to work. I wake up to enjoy my passion and live it. And I can tell you stories of things that happen every single day. When you started and you said 250 days in a hotel a year, in more than 10 countries, in hundreds of cities, where people are different, where lifestyle is different, where Lebanese, which I travel the world to meet, have evolved differently. And the Lebanese in Australia is different than the one in Canada or in America or in Dubai or in Saudi Arabia. And I can give lectures and probably write books about the adaptation of the human being on his country of origin, how far is it from his homeland, and then taking a step back and seeing that Lebanese DNA that flows in us that would never change. Yeah.
And there's 16 million people, Lebanese, living outside of Lebanon?
16, exactly. That's the number. So 16 outside of Lebanon, probably 4 in Lebanon, 20 million around the world. We hear about the first person that left Lebanon is around the 1750s or 1800s.
Where did they go? Sorry.
They started in Brazil.
Okay.
And then they continue to Australia. The first Australian arrived in 1850. 18, 1850. The first Lebanese in Brazil, they say, arrived around the 1815. And they've been there for as long as we remember. And I can go on and tell you about the culture of the Brazil community and how it changed to Lebanese. I can go on and tell you about the Australian culture and how it changed to Lebanese. So these 20 or 16 million around the world have left an amazing mark, an amazing footprint. But each of them
has... Did you say
has
footprint or footprint? Because, By the way, I thought you said footprint. I'm like, I'm 100%.
Yes.
Great pun, by the way. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And each one in every country has evolved differently, depending on the community around. So I made it for the last 3 years my mission to travel the world, meet the Lebanese community all around the world, try to connect them as much as I can, try to see and understand where they are and why they are and how have they evolved and what is the impact we left on all the societies. And when that unfortunate war started, I've never, ever discussed politics, but I did one video and looked at the camera and looked at the world and said, we've been for you, around you, supporting you, dear world, for the last 7,000 years. We've never done war, but we've exported a business, we've exported law, we've exported the alphabet, we've exported food. We've done it all, and we have helped you build your own countries. And dear Arab world, please look at us today. We need you. Let's stop this war. And this was the only video I've ever done.
The sad thing is, Anthony, is that there's been more than one war, right? So it's like, which war? It's like, exactly. it goes back such a long time. But like you said, there's 7,000 years of history there. Lebanon has remained resilient, and challenges come left, right, and center, and it keeps somehow overcoming most of those challenges. Before I go any further, typically on the show, I ask my guests for a safe word. So if there's a question I'm going to ask, I don't think in your case it's going to happen, but there's a question that you don't want to answer, you have an option to use a safe word. So do you have a safe word?
I'm very confident that I would answer any questions.
So just give me, come up with something. Come up with something. Every guest has to. So I'm going to press you on this.
I can say NGNO.
NGNO. And you like also what my wife has designed for you? Look at this.
Loved it. So much attention. Exactly the choice of jacket I'm wearing, which is a jeans jacket I have, when my hair was white enough, and the little details in the background that speak Lebanon, that speak history.
We tried to remove some garlic and onions, but I think if you look close enough, by the way, for those who are listening, we're looking at the image, the customized AI image of Anthony and his passion points. There might be some garlic and onions somewhere, but you have to look really, really close.
The first thing I did is look at the salad and make sure there are no onions in the salad, and I'm not sure I found
it. So tick, halas. We tick. We've got a safe word. You're happy with the image. Yeah. We can move on. So you've obviously got a big following online, right? And you love, it's obviously very clear, you love doing what you do. Is this something that you've always known you've wanted to do? Or is this something that you, as you got older, you started to realize, actually, I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't really want to do that anymore. So by process of elimination, you kind of stumbled on something that you love. Or did you know all along, you're like, you know what? I want to build a career. I want to try it the smart way. But eventually, I want to do what I want to do. How did it come about?
There's something inside me that always wanted to be special and different. And when I first met my wife in 2005, the first couple of words we talked with each other were, I know I'm going to be someone someday, one day, and I need a first lady with me, and I need the big support. Back then, she definitely didn't understand what I meant, but she looked at me and said, whatever, until day's end. And this is what happened. So it evolved from nightlife to food to being a lecturer in dentistry in 23 countries, in giving lectures about lots of things in dentistry, when I was the first one in the Middle East to do it, of laser hypnotherapy, etc. And then came garlic and onions. And when I first started in 2012, it was about writing reviews. So I wanted to change the industry. It started with no garlic and onions, but for me, it was no advertisement anymore, no lying anymore. And I wanted to write reviews about restaurants to give the real review, picture of the place, pictures of food, and picture of the bill. And this is how it started. It started by changing how the industry thinks. You go on now and see all the advertisement outside. Every single advertisement is paid off. Every single review is paid off. Every single top 10 list is paid off. And I want to say, okay, wait, no.
Cut the BS.
Enough. And this is how it started. 2014, went back home, looked at her. She was at home and said, tomorrow morning is a new day if you say yes. said, come on, okay, tell me more. I said, tomorrow we're going on TV. The minute we're on TV, it's done. New life, new everything. Where something else is going to happen into our life. Are you ready for this challenge with me? Because I want much more. I want to show my country in a different way. I want to be the first show on TV that shows the real Lebanon and enough of all that politics and negativity around. We deserve Arab to have a show like Anthony Bourdain. We deserve Arabs to have a show like Guy Fieri. We deserve Arabs to have a show on Discovery Channel, National Geography. So tomorrow is a new day. Are you in with it? With me? She said, okay, fine. Did she really say that? Did she ever imagine today?
She's probably telling her friends, I married a doctor, he's a dentist. Yeah. Next minute,
boom, poof, wow, explosion, change.
2012, this is 2012? 2014.
I stopped officially dentistry in 2019. So I was on and off both sides for the next 5 years, even I did photography during these days. And one day I said, okay, I can do more. Focusing on one thing. I'm a strong believer. I believe God wants me to do something. I'm on a mission that is way more than being in the clinic and changing and fixing people's teeth. I need to go all the way full on.
But there seems to be multiple missions. There seems to be you want to understand the Lebanese culture and how that sort of developed outside of Lebanon.
Yeah.
Two, it's to promote the best of Lebanon. Right. And three, it's probably to bring awareness to quality food, restaurants or businesses to help out the little guys, I'm guessing.
And promote, definitely, and the most important, promote the Lebanese culture.
That's exactly.
So through food, protecting our culture, protecting our food, and putting us on the international map of great food. Manouche, now, last year, is on the international map of good food in the United Nations. Hummus is ours, not someone else.
No, well, that's a big debate. Right? I mean, that debate's been going on for decades.
Exactly.
How many countries claim, just on that, I know there's, I don't want to interrupt your thought, but how many countries claim hummus to be their own?
Probably five.
What are they?
Lebanon, Palestine, Israel, Jordan, Syria.
Don't the Turks also claim it?
They claim everything. Oops.
Okay, and you've obviously done a lot of traveling, right? And you've met a lot of interesting characters and people. Can you give a bit of an insight into what have you learned most about the Lebanese people living outside of Lebanon, and also an insight into about yourself? What have you learned about yourself in the process?
I've developed a great knowledge, I would say, of something I call the Lebanese DNA. The Lebanese DNA is something that you cannot explain unless you experience it. And it starts by who you are, what you are, from where you are. And you can be a second generation Lebanese, born in Australia, parents immigrated probably 70 years back, never visited Lebanon in your life, and at the age of 30, decide to visit. The minute you land, you don't understand why you cry. You don't understand the feeling of shivering you feel when the plane opens the door. And the minute you look all around, you say, whoa, this is where I belong. This is something super unexpected and new and bizarre. A Lebanese will not understand. It goes and it continues with, you can eat Italian food and you love it. You can eat sushi and you love it. Chinese, et cetera, et cetera. But every time you enjoy a manouche, there's something that happens, a sense of, okay, what's happening to my body? And that feeling multiplies by 100 when you're in Los Angeles or Sydney. So
it's
all
a taste
of these,
of home. It's a taste of home outside of home.
It's incredible how it connects to you. I had a conference I've done in Sydney probably last year or the year before. And I opened up to 700 people sitting in a room. And I asked, there is a bottle on your table. Please open it and smell it. And tell me how many tears you're gonna shed. And then the bottle of rose water opens up. Everybody said this, does this. And they start applauding, talking, murmuring between each other and saying, okay, wait, what the hell is this feeling? Yeah. I traveled home just by smelling something. So that connection to
it
the land.
It evokes a sensory memory that is unmistakable. And it's unique to Lebanon.
Exactly. So that connection to the land, that connection to emotion, that connection to the villages, that connections to a million things that happen in Lebanon makes it different. So I've explored and I explored how Lebanese live. So the first time in Australia, I remember in 2000, I met people who talk in a way that we stopped talking in Lebanon. So the evolution has evolved differently. I said, okay, wow, I love your language. Where are you from? I said, Akkor, Kuwait. In Lebanon, we stopped talking this way. Wow. Who taught you this language? My grandma.
But the legacy lives on. Because,
exactly. Yeah. I met a famous blogger in Canada. Her name is Maya. And she speaks Balbaki. Whoa, wait. Okay, wait. How many years have you lived in Lebanon? Yeah. I said, no, never. Grandma taught me Arabic. Amazing. So all of these protect the heritage in a way or another, or keep things going.
It's romantic, it's nostalgic, but it's super important for the continuation of culture.
The last part of the question, the insight, which is
about
important.
About yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want to learn about yourself.
Exactly. So living in Lebanon or growing up in Lebanon, you live as... We talk about ourselves saying we're special, we're different, we're intelligent, we're whatever Lebanese think of themselves. But you, when you travel the world, you understand why. You understand who you are. You understand why they say you're intelligent. You understand why you fight up wars and continue. And okay, it's war outside. Fine, I'll continue my life. You understand how you can adapt to being European. How can you adapt to being American? How can you adapt to being Australian or Latin American? And how Lebanese have adapted differently depending on cultures, and how Lebanese, you would never see a Lebanon town, but you will see a Chinatown. You would never see a Lebanon town, but you see a little Italy. Because Lebanese adapt and Lebanese blend with every single other
country. Have you been to Edgware Road recently in London? I mean, if you look and go to Edgware Road in London, it's literally wall to wall Lebanese restaurants.
Yeah. Or go to Detroit.
They call it Ajwad, or they call it Ajwad Road or something. It's like dirty road. What's the equivalent of? It's like, yeah. Anyway.
Or go to Detroit.
Yeah, go to Detroit. Yeah. Look, I was one of those. I lived most of my life outside of Lebanon. I've never lived in Lebanon, but I have my dad's Lebanese. And everything that you've been touching on about Lebanese who live outside, they sort of band together very closely. The minute someone else knows that they're Lebanese, no matter religion, age, whatever, there's a closeness, there's an affinity there that you're part of something much bigger. And it's a warmth that makes you feel happy. I used to remember when I used to go to London, any restaurant in Lebanon, in London, that was Lebanese, I'd walk in and I'd feel a sense of home, even though I never lived there before. It doesn't make any sense. So your biggest insight about yourself.
So the biggest insight about myself, and I believe every single Lebanese that is still in Lebanon, is you need to be more humble. So I learned to be more humble. I learned to just know my limits and know that we are different, but not the best people on earth. We need to accept others. We need to know our limits. We need to blend more with others. So being more humble and stop living in that dilemma, not dilemma, I would say, that that education at home of mom and pop said, you are the best. Ibni aqwa wahad.
I think that's the same thing for most Arab
males. Me
too. Every Arab mom thinks their son is the greatest thing ever. And you obviously love what you're doing. And you've obviously met some probably amazing, amazing people across the different markets. Is there a story in mind that comes to mind where it really took your... It took your breath away. It made you feel extremely nostalgic, very emotional, particularly a restaurant, food, person that you connected with on a different level.
One day I was in Australia in a coffee shop. And there is this lady that looks at me all the time for the next 5 minutes looking at me. And I felt she probably knows me. She's probably Lebanese, but doesn't look like one. And then I smiled. She approached, so looked at me and said, I want to tell you something. And she started crying. She said, okay, wait, whoa, breathe. I'm going to cry with you. Wait.
It wasn't me.
Wait. She said, I need to tell you something. She said, please do. She said, when I'm in Australia, I'm born here. I'm not Australian because they look at me as the immigrant. And when I travel to Lebanon, I'm not Lebanese anymore because they look at me as the immigrant, as an immigrant. So in Lebanon, I'm not Lebanese anymore. And I do not even speak Lebanese well. And in Australia, despite being born here, I'm still not Australian because I'm not white. We have a conflict of identity and it's killing me. And she continued on crying. For her, she felt good. For me, it was the learning of the year, understanding who we are and what we do. And for people who are in Lebanon that have the dream of, we want to leave. Leave where? Leave what? There is no home like home. And even though we live here now, home is still Lebanon for a million other different reasons. And from the other side is appreciate what you have, who you are. And the minute you want to leave, leave for the right reasons to build up a new future and a better future while not forgetting who you are. I would never look back at Lebanon and say, I hate my country or I'm happy I left. never, ever. This is a red line. I am here because I see a better future for me and my kids, and I have dreams to achieve, and I'm helping my country in better ways than being home. But every single morning, very proudly, I look back and say, Alhamdulillah, I'm very glad and happy I am Lebanese, and I would not forget who I am. So I've learned lots of different stories all around, and this is the first story that comes to mind, or restaurants I've been to, or chefs I've visited, or I can go on and on and on. But
you know what's crazy about that story is how much it resonated with me. The reason I started this show in the first place was to figure out who I am. I was born in the UK. I was born in London, but I had an Italian mom and a Lebanese dad, and I was then moved. I lived in Nigeria for the longest time, and I always struggled with, where am I from? Where do I fit in? In England, I wouldn't feel English. When I go to Lebanon, I didn't speak Arabic good enough, and everyone would know. So I didn't feel Lebanese. So struggling to find an identity, struggling to find a place to where you belong, is something that a lot of people take for granted. If you don't have a home, if you don't know where you're from, never underestimate the importance of feeling attached and connected to something. So the show, why I started it, only back in March, by the way, it was a way for me to reconnect and to understand and to explore. And the guests that I've had on the show have really helped me. So when you were talking about that lady crying, for me, it's the same. I'm not a lady and I'm not crying, but the same feeling that she had is the very reason why I did this in the first place. Right, let's get on to some questions, mm-hmm. Okay? Because there's a lot of stuff in there that is gonna cover it. So I don't wanna, take away, steal the thunder. So you're now in charge of the show, Anthony, right?
Cool.
It's not my show anymore, it's all yours. So
put off the lights.
Yeah. Take out a ball, read out loud, and let's have a debate, let's have a chat.
That's heavy.
Yeah, you like the branding? It's all nice. About the branding, all about the marketing.
People make the food, or food makes the people?
Okay, this is complicated. So do people make the food, as in, they actually literally make the food, or does the food make the people, define the people? Food is something that, everyone, when they associate with Lebanon, they associate the food. Lebanese food is one of the best in the world. Right? So food has actually helped to make Lebanon for a lot of people. Then there's other times when you want to go home and you want to go, you want to have home cooked food. It's the warmth, it's the love of being at home, the cooking the food that matters most. So what is it for you?
Is it the egg or the chicken? And that's the same question. What makes Lebanon is definitely the food. It's definitely the food, the best in the world, the most varied in the world, the most generous in the world. But what makes the food is an amazing country. 1,200 villages, 60 days of rain during the year and not more, a highest of 35 degrees, from 0 to 3,000, a great winter, 4 distinct seasons, and so on and so forth. So what makes the food is definitely the people behind it. And I'm talking about Lebanese food, but I can tell you about Italian food and the freshness and the tomatoes and the red things behind it. I can go on and push and tell you about Saudi food and how harsh it is and how fatty it is and how it's inspired or it covers the need of the desert. So look at the food is, why do they eat it? Why do we eat vegetables? Because we have them. Why our food is colorful? Because we're under the sun all year long, etc., etc. Why do we eat bread? Because we have wheat, etc. Or big families. So back to another country, I would say, give it as an example, Saudi Arabia, which I discovered many times. The food is inspired by a 50 degrees. It takes that sun. It fills up the body to fight heat during the day. So lots of fat, milk, more on the goat, cow, and lamb, not the cow, and so on and so forth. Why do we have white cheese and not the yellow cheeses? Because we had to eat immediately the famous Lebanese goat, and we didn't have cows back then. The Europeans are more on the cheese. They have time for it. They age it for 6 months, sometimes a year, and so on. Why do we have wines? Because they are the greatest and the oldest in the world, up to 1,900 meter elevation and the highest elevated wines ever. So who creates the food? People or the country, food or the people? It's a egg and chicken
Which
thing.
Are you
and,
choosing?
And if you look
I'm going to push you, mate. I'm going to push you.
If you look at people around the world, if you look at the communities around the world, they unite around food, smell of food, festivities are around food. So I believe people make the food makes the people.
I'm with you.
All the way.
We're off to a flyer. Right, next ball. Mate, you're in charge, remember?
So I'm in charge.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, right. You take. I'm not here.
Should I talk less?
No, no, you talk as much as you like. Ahla wa sahla.
Ahla wa sahla. Three people you would have a meal with.
All right, so think about this. This is past. This is present. This is family, non-family. This is anyone you like, fictional, non-fictional. Three people that you'd love to sit around a table and have a meal with, dead or alive, past or present.
I would love to sit with...
I'm taken, by the way, so you can... I'll remove myself. I'll remove myself from that. I'll make it easy.
I'd love to understand what made Gibran Gibran, Gibran Khalil Gibran, and understand how, why is he famous? What did he think of? How did he feel what Lebanon is? How did he understand Lebanon, even though he was not in Lebanon? Why? He's probably I won't have to explain it then more.
That's it. First name that came as usually
100 years back. Why?
Yep. Second person.
Second person would be. So I'm gonna the top three that come to mind.
There's no wrong answer.
Lots of them.
It's not a trick question.
Winston Churchill.
All right, you're going British for your second. Okay.
He's intelligent, he's calm, he's smooth, he knows what he wants. He's taken great decisions.
He loves a cigar. He can give you a cigar after dinner.
He loves life. So definitely, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to go British. I'm going to go somewhere else. Even though I wanted a person I respect is the founder of Virgin.
Richard Branson.
But I'll go somewhere else.
Sir Richard Branson. Yeah. Maybe put your wife in there just so that way when she watches this, she's not going to get upset. Does that make sense?
whenever we have dinners and they say, sit next to us, I said, okay, I'm going to sleep next to her all night. So fine, we can change. okay. And with all the people of the world, I have to choose. I still have one chance. And that would be Charles de Gaulle. I'll tell you why. Because back then when the French left Lebanon, there are lots of unanswered questions to date. Mm-hmm. So why did they come and what did they discover? Why did they leave? And why was that time to leave? And how did they choose the final border of Lebanon? And there are lots of unanswered questions about why is that Lebanon that small and why not bigger from the south or bigger from the north? And how was it created in for us to live all together? So I would love to have an unanswered questions on those to build up the future today. Definitely with the world going so fast, I would love to sit with the founder of Tesla and founder of Facebook and people working on AI and NASA, et cetera. But I'm more on the understanding the past to build a cleaner future, which anyway was going to happen and is going to happen, without the unanswered questions that made us fight for or against, to have that world that is unclean today and filled with hatred of unanswered questions.
It's a very interesting way. And you didn't choose any foodies in any of that. And you're having a meal, which is interesting. You've gone down the history route to help shape the future, which is very interesting. Insightful, actually.
That's a beautiful way of asking it again.
Because on
a food table, unfortunately, it's like politics. Yeah. So each one of the foodies would say, I am right, my way or the highway, and pushing and grabbing the discussion his way by, okay, I eat it this way or you don't eat it this way, etc. So whenever it comes to food, I would love to sit with people that understand less about food, not pretentious about food, where we can have an open discussion. And this is what happens to politics. Sit with four politicians, you end up killing yourself because each one of them does not discuss politics. They want to impose politics. So this is why I didn't choose any food.
Question that I have is that what are you going to be eating with Charles de Gaulle and with Winston Churchill? What are you going to be eating?
It's going to be a very simple piece of meat, something without sauce, no salad, no big lettuce, something you can grab with the fork without having to going all around. Right. Definitely no pasta, no red sauce, small piece of meat, baked potatoes.
It's a big
meal. Nice red wine. And these small little pieces of meat you can chew in 5 seconds and continue discussion without having to fill up your mouth or let your tongue go around.
Do you know how remarkable it is that you're able to answer that so quickly and so vividly? That's crazy. Right, next question.
Fusion fun or unmuddied authenticity?
So this is about, do you believe in mixing and matching different types of food groups? Like I'm saying Thai with Japanese or Peruvian with Indian, for example. Or do you believe in that unmuddied, authentic taste? So let Japanese food be Japanese food. Let Indian food be Indian food. And let Lebanese food be Lebanese food. Where do you believe? Are you more fusion fan or are you more being about authentic food?
I'm gonna answer it in one simple sentence that I learned from my trip to Malaysia. And I remember waking up in the morning, 8 a.m., wanting to have food. And then I discovered rice and noodles and spices and boiled stuff and meat and pig. And okay, wait, I'm coming for breakfast. And this guy comes in and said, oh, wait, there is nothing called breakfast. It's just called food. And this was a big learning for me. So this is why I understood that, yeah, in Lebanon, we do eat raw meat for breakfast. And you can eat knefe or for breakfast or for a dessert. Or you can eat lamb fat for breakfast, etc. So we do have it, but no, it's called breakfast. Anyway, so from that, I will jump into the evolution of the world and where we are and how a human being has been lately getting married from one another. This is a complicated answer.
Okay, I'm going to tell you.
So the world, God created the world, blacks in a place, white in a place, and yellow in another. So we human being went all across and started multiplying.
I mean, Genghis Khan did a lot of that himself, to be fair.
So we multiplied and multiplied. Is it good or bad? I don't know. Does it work or not? I don't know. This is another discussion, another podcast. So why not the food? So why not mix and match? Why not reinvent? Why not modernize? Is hummus the best thing to have? Yes. But is hummus was the best thing to have for the last probably 1,000 years? Should it be what it is? Didn't you update from a normal baguette with butter to a cheese and ham toasted? Didn't we upgrade to something called Michelin star restaurant, etc.? So yes, we need to modernize our food in the best way possible without, I'm not sure if that's that debatable question. Chocolate hummus or not? I don't know.
Chocolate hummus?
I've had it. It's delicious.
No,
but no, should I accept it or not? I don't know.
Abort. No, no.
Negative. Exactly.
That's an NGO. That's your safe word right there. That's 100%. But on that, I mean, I've experimented with different type of foods. You go to these great restaurants, these fusion restaurants. It tastes great. But then you're like, every restaurant can interpret something different. So then for me, it doesn't become about the culture of the food. It becomes about the chef. It's not about the food itself and the culture. Does that make sense? Because it's the chef taking liberties with fusing different things together based on their own palate, based on their own.
It's a game of subconscious and mindset. It's all about subconscious. You need to be ready to experience something new. At the end of the dinner, you would look at yourself and say, this is not comfort food. So I won't have it every day.
So which one are you going with? You're going with fusion fun or you're going with unmuddied authenticity?
Fusion. I love fusion fun. But again, that's a once a week because authenticity is something important, which is called comfort food or nostalgic food. You would eat hummus every day. You cannot eat fusion food every day.
Not
you would eat labneh every day. Exactly. Yeah. So it is experiencing and exploring is very important for people who say, no, I don't want explore. You'll understand. I had the best Lebanese Mexican in Brooklyn. Outstanding.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And how the Mexican chef lady and the Lebanese chef man mixed and matched together. I've had Chinese Lebanese in Australia. Outstanding.
Chinese Lebanese in Australia.
Yes. So imagine a halloumi samosa.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Imagine a Lebanese carbonara. So instead of putting pork, you would put awarma. And at the end, put a little bit of sumac on top instead of putting a little bit of pepper.
Mate, talking to you is dangerous. I just want to eat everything right now. You make food sound so good. But on that, by the way, I've noticed a lot of your reviews, you're always very positive about the food. Do you think you criticize enough or do you think every food that you taste is worth being so good?
I do criticize enough. It usually comes with, I'll tell you if it's done right or wrong.
Because you're very optimistic. You're a positive person. You're an optimistic person. So I
don't bash.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But I would
you always
look
for the best in things. You look
exactly.
For the best in things.
I would look at things and say, it's good. Bad, it's done wrong, it's done right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've said, wow, the restaurant was amazing.
Yeah.
The Pepsi was the greatest I've had. So you would understand instead of saying food was bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I had.
So you're just doing it in a polite, non-direct, fun way. Non-confrontational way. Okay. In a fusion fun way.
Yeah.
There we go. Right. Next question.
Next. How often are you invited for dinner?
So this is by friends, right? Because look, you're a food critic, or you're a food blogger. So I was talking about this with my wife the other day. I was thinking, having someone over to my house who all they do is review food. Do you know how much stress and pressure that puts on the chef and the cook at home? It's unbelievable.
I can tell you stories.
How often do you get invited by your friends to their house to actually sample the food? Okay.
Less and less.
So give me a number. Every month, how many times do you get invited out to someone else's house?
House.
This is a friend's
twice.
House. Twice a month. That used to be?
Every day. I cannot lie. I do not know how to lie. My wife knows it. Everybody knows it about you. All my friends know about it.
Yeah.
It would show on my face, even on my shows.
Yeah.
People know if I like it or not.
Yeah.
So when we got married and we got invited out, on our way, my wife would sit in the car and say, don't say anything. So at the end I say, okay, don't ask me, I don't say. So we arrived to these people. I can tell you the story of spaghetti. I can tell you the story of shairi. I can tell you stories. So we arrived to first one. It was a pasta night. And I had a bite. I cannot eat something that's not good. Impossible. So I had a bite and stopped. Very, very, very gently. So the woman looks at me and said, why aren't you eating? I said, I'm fine. Why aren't you eating? I said, okay, I'm good. I said, no, I need to know, why aren't you eating? So I looked at her and said, you know what? If the stupid man who invented pasta wanted it to be broken, he would have sold it as shairi. So my wife looks at me and said, and this is not talking tonight. I said, she asked.
Yeah. And she insisted. So check, in your defense, she insisted.
We weren't invited anymore. On another hand, we were invited by a lady who does desserts. So food coming in, etc. I had a bite too and then stopped enjoying my soft drink. And she looks at me and said, you're not eating? I said, I'm good. No, tell me, isn't my food good? I looked at her and said, you know what? Stick to desserts.
Wow.
And that was
And in that moment, you killed her. look, I was thinking about it. It must be very difficult for people to invite you over. I mean, as a friend, it's one person, but as a food reviewer, food critic, it's a whole different ballgame. We did this thing with my friends a few years back before COVID, where a bit like in the UK, come dine with me, you go around people's houses, and you have to basically rate and score your friend's cooking. So let's say there's four of us. We go down to four different, we'll go around in rotation. And I was always quite difficult as a reviewer. And if they're watching, they know what I'm about to say. So it was our turn to go around someone else's house. And we have to score the ambience, the setting. We have to score the entertainment. They have to do something that's quite fun. We have to score the food, the quality of the food. And then we have to score the innovation in the food. So if you're going to cook me spaghetti bolognese and it's good, you score well on taste, but you're not going to score well on innovation. So, and then you add up all these scores and at the end, there's a winner. So we went to someone's house and they made a salad and they made some lasagna and they made something. I'm like, my mom's Italian, right? So the lasagna, I'm in the back of my mind, I'm going, hold on, this better be good. But I started with the salad. And they asked me, Luca, what do you think about the salad? And I said to myself, okay, I'm no way comparing myself to you, but I was like, in that moment, I have two options, okay? I want to win and I want to be honest, or I can lie and save the friendship. I chose to win and be honest. So they said, Luca, how was the salad? And the only word that would come up to me was lacking. That was it. So I was known as the lacking guy. So every time I would go to someone else's house and someone would be cooking a salad, they would overdo it with, you know, with additional ingredients, with additional salad sauce, etc. So I would taste salad in the future that was just the most horrendously thing put together, but it would never be lacking. But it's a lot of fun when you go to someone's house, but it's also a lot of pressure for those that are hosting. And I think my future friends, if whoever they do come to my house, I will guarantee that they're going to be impressed with my wife's cooking, not my own, because she does all the cooking in the house. But so you are always welcome here, Anthony.
Yeah, thank you.
Just come on a full stomach.
Can't
just come on a full stomach.
You know, my strategy is very clear. When someone asks me, how is it? I start by get a fork. If you eat with me, so I can explain why I don't like it. we can go there. If not, if they say, no, just give me a pin. I said, no, get a fork. Eat this cake with me.
Yeah.
Didn't you feel it's chewy? Didn't you feel it's undercooked?
So you work with them.
Exactly. So the answer is always about the mechanics of it. It's not about, I didn't like it. So the Arab way or the Lebanese way is, how was the food? I don't like it.
Yeah,
who are you to say you don't like it or not? It's your personal decision, opinion. But from a technical perspective and 10,000 restaurant back after and et cetera, and hundreds of kitchens I've been to, eat it. Okay. Did you feel it? Did you feel shawarma? Did you feel the chewiness? Did you feel the vinegar?
Yeah. See, that's great for you and it's great for the viewers, but for the person who's cooked that, as they say, it's the friend, it's like pouring salt in the wounds. It's like, it can't be any worse. Okay, I get it. It's not juicy enough. I get it. Man, that's tough. But so you're always welcome here. Next question. How many are we still have in there? We must have, I think, four.
Six.
Yeah, we still got a few more. Okay. Good. We're doing
long
well.
Way.
We're doing well.
Discover yourself or discover new culture. To be able to discover a new culture, you need to discover yourself. Maturity is something super important. I've been lecturing about it, talking about it, letting people know about it. To understand, to be able to mature, you need to understand what maturity is. You can understand, now I know what maturity is. I am ready to mature and it starts at 20. And there are people that reach a certain level at 60, 70, and 80 and look back and say, what did I do in my life? And didn't appreciate or discover maturity. Maturity is not something you can read about. Maturity is not something you can learn about. It's something that just evolves internally. So you discover yourself to evolve, but you need to be aware of it. And the minute you get the maturity, it comes with a package of exploring more, of traveling more, of loving more, of connecting more, of appreciating people more. And it comes with the culture. So understanding cultures of the world, there are people who go on trips, travel the world, come back without understanding anything, eat hummus on all their trips, or probably discover one good restaurant and have six dinners at it. I love the food. I tried it six times. Okay, wait, it's better you don't travel. So understanding cultures, you need to be mature enough to go to, and I've done it a million times, to go to the Sahara and sit on the floor and eat with your hands and not say, no, in my culture, I only eat with a fork. Okay, wait, back to maturity.
Yeah.
You need to build up yourself to be
and
able to build up the
and less ignorance, because a lot of it's ignorance as well, right? Or lack of education. By the way, we've mentioned hummus a few times. I'm going to give you a top tip about hummus. Are you ready for this?
Come on.
Never have hummus and beer. Never drink beer and have hummus.
What did happen to you?
Your stomach will become the most bloated thing you could put. You're intolerant to garlic and onions? Wait and see when you have some hummus and beer. Right. My dad told me this about 20 years ago. I was still a young man. He told me this. And I wanted to prove him wrong. I was like, no, this is nonsense. This is an old wives' tale. He was absolutely right. Drinking beer and having hummus, your stomach just blows out like that. So there you go. Top tip from me on the inside track. Good insight to take home. Don't have beer with
highlight
hummus.
Of the
there
episode.
You go. There you go.
The one dish you wished was Lebanese. Spaghetti bolognese. My favorite ever, man. Wow. I can have spaghetti every day.
You know, my wife cooked spaghetti bolognese just yesterday.
I love it.
We have some left over in the fridge. You're not having any of it.
It needs to be al dente. It needs to be fresh. 100%. It needs to be, whoa.
No, it's been like spaghetti bolognese is beautiful. Do you think the Italian culture, when it comes to food, can rival the Lebanese?
Yeah, I believe Lebanese and Italians are cousins. Very, very close first degree cousins. We are copy-paste of the culture, copy-paste of the food in different ways. You can eat rice and lentils, which are pasta and lentils in Italy. You can eat our cheese, our manouche, their pizza, our carbs, their carb, our bread, their bread, our vegetables, their vegetables. So
it's a Mediterranean diet.
I love it. On the southern part of Italy,
yeah.
Mediterranean diet in the best way possible. And it's not only about the food, it's about the culture, the welcoming, the smiles, the fun, the laughs, the good and the bad things. What we call in Arabic, the za'ranet. I love Italian culture. I'm a big fan. I super love it. If I was not lucky enough to be born Lebanese, I would have wished to be born Italian. And understanding the Italian culture and how European they are and how probably, I would say, more modernized they are or cleaner they are and more appreciative of their country or more lovable love of life. Their country.
They love life and how clean
their country is, etc. Yeah. I would say just, oh, guys, Lebanese, just look at Italians and let's turn our country to be as clean and as respectful and as etc. of them and as productive of them. And we
you know what's funny, that deeply ironic, is that the Italians are saying the same thing, not about the Lebanese, but about other countries. They wish their country could be as well run as other countries. So everyone always looks at everyone else to see what is better. Look, I'm fortunate enough, my mum is Italian, and but I don't know enough about the Italian culture to say. But what I would say is that every time I go to Italy, the people, the vibe, the atmosphere, the environment, the food, the scenery, the landscape, it's spectacular. And I think Tuscany is a slice of heaven. I really generally believe that. It's beautiful. And a nice gelato overlooking the sunset in Tuscany, doesn't get better.
Indeed. Choose a dish that best describes your wife. Oh, that's complicated.
You weren't expecting that on the inside track, were you? That's the second time I've got him about his wife. Second time. Yeah.
I would say fattoush.
Okay. Why fattoush?
Fattoush is colorful, fresh, generous, loaded, made of even ingredients, cut in the same size, acidic at the end.
Is that a good thing?
You can... understand it in your ways. So it hits at the end. It has something that tickles the tongue, that is sumac, and it puts a smile on the face.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Very nice. I think she'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
It's not lacking, that's for sure.
No.
Amazing. And if you had described yourself as a dish, what would you choose?
I would say loaf of bread, ready to absorb, ready to listen, ready to mature, ready to age. Simply bread.
And
sourdough.
Yeah, and that goes well with fattoush, I think, right?
Yeah.
Can make an argument. Look at that. Look at us, romantics. Tabia, let's do another question.
Yeah. Lebanese cuisine appreciated or appropriated?
Appropriated means stolen, if you don't know. So appreciated is appreciated. So is Lebanese cuisine being stolen by other cultures, other cuisines around the world? Or is it just being well appreciated?
It's being appreciated by many, stolen by many. It's a continuous debate. I would start by saying that Lebanese have not created anything, probably, but have perfected everything. And the Lebanese cuisine for the last 400 years has been perfected. We have more than 56 civilizations that came to Lebanon, and we've learned from them. We didn't fight them. We learned how to perfect hummus. We learned how to perfect shawarma. We learned how to perfect baklava. We learned how to perfect French cuisine. We learned how we took from the French class. We took from the Arab world that big portioning. We understood how generosity is important onto our table. We grabbed from the Mediterranean diets the vegetables and the fruits, etc., etc. So it's a cuisine that has been identified in the world as one of the healthiest, not to say the healthiest, the most varied. We have more than 200 plates of meza and another 200 plates of non-meza, so home food. Exactly. So people think that we eat hummus every day. Tabkhat, exactly, or yakhnid. So no culture in the world has more than 400 different choices in one culture, in one book.
Especially with a country that big.
So yes, people are appreciating it. And hummus is today on probably 50% of all Michelin-starred restaurants in the world, even though others have registered it and appropriated it and said they created it. And on another hand, there are others that look at it and say, no, we did it. We invented baklava. No, prove it. No, you didn't. We invented manouche. Oh, no. Wait.
I mean, the Turks are claiming baklava.
Don't claim things you cannot prove. And definitely, during hundreds of years of occupation, we created it, you appropriate it.
I had a guest on my show, Anthony Tuma. I don't know if you know him. He was on The Voice. He wrote a song called Baklava. It's actually pretty good. And we had a little mini debate about where baklava came from. And he was pretty defiant that it's Lebanese. So
definitely from Trablus, all the way.
Trablus.
I can tell you the stories.
I love it. I love it. Do you have a favorite dish, Lebanese dish, yourself?
Wara anab.
Really?
Stuffed grapevine leaves.
It's an art form to roll wara anab well.
It's not only an art form to roll it, but it's an art form to cook it. And only North Lebanon or the Tripoli side of Lebanon would cook it for 16 hours on low fire. And this is how it should be done. I've had wara anab that is cooked under pressure for half an hour. That's not it.
You should come to my village in the north.
16 hours.
Of all the villages you've been to, I don't think you've been to my village in the north.
Which one is it?
Ras Kifa.
I know where it is. Probably never filmed in it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to invite you to Ras Kifa.
Wara anab.
We have good everything. It's just wara anab. We have a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
We have good kibbeh there.
So you have to invite me home.
And we have good arak.
Recorded.
Yeah, yeah. My cousin makes homemade. Yeah, my cousin makes homemade arak as well from the village. Really good. Good stuff. Do you drink arak?
Of course.
Yeah.
Every single
With a bit of kibbeh naye as well.
You know that saying in Lebanon that says, my mom does the best tabbouleh and my dad does the best arak.
Yeah.
And this is multiplied by all the families in Lebanon.
Yeah. My cousin's arak isn't that great, but because he's watching, I'm going to say it's amazing.
Next, what would your wife say about your cooking?
What would your wife say?
What would again. Your wife say yeah. about your cooking?
Yeah.
So my wife, I'm going to say the same sentence she uses. Anthony is great at inventing things and creating things that are related to street food. So I'm, in her opinion, I'm the best street food creator, which I appreciate that.
What does that mean, street food?
So I'm great into creating good burgers, good sandwiches, inventing new ideas of grab and eat, grab and go things.
Okay.
Not into the tabkhat, et cetera, et cetera. I've cooked for years and years and years. And the minute we started what we do, it's very clear. I'm the taster. She's the cook. I don't want to be the cook. And she definitely does not claim to be a food critic.
Yeah.
So we have a great balance at home. She cooks. I love her cooking. I taste. So when it comes to burgers, sandwiches, submarines, having fun and dirtying all the
dad,
kitchen.
Dad barbecue. Exactly. Dad style. Yeah, yeah.
I'm the man.
We all try. Look, I think I was thinking about the other day. You obviously sample so much different types of food. It's very rich, the food, I'm guessing, that you taste as well. From a health perspective, from a dietary perspective, how do you make sure that what you're eating is also healthy? Because you don't want to be just for the sake of trying and tasting and, you know, putting yourself into a situation.
I do not focus on eating healthy things. And definitely people understand and notice this. I have manaish, I have meat, I've never stopped at something and said, no, I'm not having it. But I know my limits. Mm. So I know when to stop at a bite or two. I would never, ever eat a chocolate. I would never, ever eat soft drink that is not diet or light. So I would not eat sweets, sugar, or desserts unless I'm filming. And I know when to stop. So I eat everything. I do not deprive myself. Every single thing you might imagine. I've tasted, you name it, from worms all the way up.
I'm going to test you. Have you tried za'atar with honey?
Delicious.
Thank you. Thank
Extremely
you.
Delicious.
Thank you. I've been Super advocating delicious. This for the longest time and you've actually tried it.
Super delicious.
Hot manaish, a layer of honey. Oh.
Super delicious.
Unbelievable. We with a bit of labneh, with a bit of labneh in there as well, perhaps. So good. So good.
Manaish with maple syrup is next level.
Is it?
Next level.
I need to find some Canadians. I don't know that many Canadians. Oh. I'll go hunt down some maple syrup though.
So the trick or what I would say to everyone, know when to stop. It's very important.
Eating.
Yes. One, do not eat things that are bad for you. For me, garlic and onions. I know that I should avoid spicy things. I know what to avoid. So it's very important. And you hear it a lot in the Lebanese culture. It's not good for me, but I like it. It makes me bloat, but I like it. That butt is killing. So know what to stop and what not to eat.
Story of the country, let's be honest.
Yeah. But exactly. Two, know when to stop.
How do you know when to stop eating? Because my problem is I overeat, right? I'm trying to lose weight all the time and I work out nearly every day, but I just love food so much, I just can't stop. So, and people tell me, oh, you could eat slower. So your brain will tell you when you're full and your stomach will stop. I just hoover it down. I went to boarding school, right? And in boarding school, I was six and it was an all boys school. If you don't eat quick, you don't eat at all. So you just had to hoover. And I haven't been able to shift away from that. If you've got any techniques or helping me to eat slower or...
Always think of the next meal. Always think that there is something that is going to come up for you to enjoy. So this morning, today as we speak, I had breakfast.
What did you have?
Labneh, eggs, cheese, the whole 9 yards of Lebanese breakfast, manoush, etc.
Malish.
And then 2 hours later, I really enjoyed half a manoush. I could have taken it all. And then I had the lunch, the Lebanese lunch. And then someone came in and said, "You're having lunch with me?" I said, "Of course." And I said, "I had another lunch."
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, 2 hours after lunch, I can eat. Because at each one of the stops, there is something that says, wait, something might come up.
Mm.
I might eat. I might be invited. Me as food blogger, wait, probably you're not having it yourself, but me as food blogger, there is always that I'm going to eat something
unknown,
in the next hour.
Yeah. So
unknown.
Keep yourself, better your stomach a bit empty.
So one bite of hummus or 10 has the same effect. One bite of the burger or 10 has the same effect. Mm. So you need to appreciate that one bite and then say, okay, fine. I can have it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's not going to run away. So in our mindset is, oh, I love it. I need to finish it.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We can do it again tomorrow.
Yeah. You've just moved to Dubai, right?
Yeah.
How do you find the food scene in Dubai so far? First impressions?
Probably one of the best in the world.
We've got
for many reasons.
A lot of Michelin star restaurants here as well.
It's not only about the Michelin star restaurants, mm-hmm. but more about the produce, more about you need it, you get it. You want it, we can import it for you. Three, life is so expensive that the competition is very high and there is no place for failure. And with 186 nationalities that want to eat good food all in one place, it's perfect. So if you look at all of these, probably there is no culture of food in the country itself. So we won't say it's the culture of Lebanese food or the culture of Italian food. It's not a food destination as a country.
No.
But yes, it has turned to be.
It's a melting
where you can
pot.
Say, yeah, I want to do the five best sushis. You can find them. The five best, etc. What is great about Dubai, not only the food industry or others, is that Dubai is where it has become the place where trends are created. We used to travel to New York to try something. You can stop traveling. We used to go to France to have Michelin star restaurant. They're all here. We used to go to LA to have the best ice cream. They're all here. So if you look at who you are, where you are, and appreciate what Dubai has become, you can travel the world while staying home and enjoy best of all worlds.
100%. And it's geographically way in which Dubai is positioned. So close to southern parts of Asia, not too far away from far parts of Asia. And then you've also got obviously Middle Eastern, Mediterranean and Western food very, very close by as well. So geographically speaking, you know, it's assimilated different types of cultures from the populations moving here. And it goes back to the question I had before about fusion fun or being authentic. There's a lot of fusion being developed out in Dubai and that's where you get the innovation piece. All right, next question. Last one. Last ball. Do you like golf? Are you a golfer, by the way? Do you like golf? Ever played golf before? No Lebanese people like golf. I don't understand it.
Not part of the culture.
Yeah, we're going to change it.
Your recipe for a successful modern day influencer.
So you're obviously a big influencer on YouTube and you haven't got there by accident. A lot of hard work, a lot of commitment. But being an influencer starting back in 2014, give or take, versus 2024, I'm guessing is slightly different. So what does it take now to be a successful modern day influencer? What's the recipe for success?
What's your expertise? This is the first question I would ask. Anyone can buy followers, unfortunately. You can buy followers and start at a million and say, I'm an influencer. But who are you? What did you learn? What's your background? Second, not every person having an iPhone is an influencer. So you need to understand a little bit of photography, a little bit of geography, a little bit of understanding what makes your content special and different. Three, always look at perfection. So what we're seeing online is bad sound, bad lighting, bad movement, bad everything. So take a step back and say, I need to identify myself and be different than others in putting a little bit more effort into creating good content and not any. Look at your studio. You could have done it all with an iPhone.
It's my home.
Exactly. In less investment in the best cameras ever. So what's happening to this world and are cameras being invested in enough or lighting or sound or whatever? Four, be genuine and truthful, not sell yourself for any money that is being given to you, because people would look at your eyes and look at inside and say, this guy is genuine or not genuine or understanding what he does. Five, go learn how to stand in front of a camera, how to talk in front of a camera, how to connect with people in front of you. This is very important. It's not don't be ashamed of learning and go learning what it is. And six, and most important, is differentiate yourself from others. So what is the content you are offering others can't? Everyone that comes in and says, help me become you, said, great, anyone can buy a phone. Anyone can film, anyone can eat, anyone can be invited to a restaurant, anyone can sit in front of a plate. But why you? And that why me, I ask myself every day. Why me? Why did God create me this way? Why me when I'm invited to a trip? Why me when I'm on a plane? Why me when I'm invited to give a conference? And every single second you ask yourself, why you, you become a better person. If, back to the questions before, you are mature enough, understand life enough, are educated enough. So life is so complicated and so easy at the same time. And understanding why, what would make people happy? How can I connect to people? How can I gain their heart or their brain? And lots of these things would make you an influencer, if the word is right. But today, buying an iPhone for $1,000 and saying, I'm going to open an Instagram account, but my followers are not increasing. Yeah, my daughter can do it.
Yeah. Well, look, I know why we brought you on the show. You've been great, Anthony. Look, you're a very positive person. You have a lot of passion for your country. You have a lot of passion for what you do. You wake up every day, I'm guessing, with a smile on your face and looking forward to whatever's in store. Anthony, it's been great. It's been great having you on. I actually have something that I haven't done before with any other guest. I have a ball here that doesn't have a single question on it. Okay. And I'm going to give this to you, and you're going to come up with a question that you would like to answer if we haven't covered it. In fact, I'm going to give you the ball and you can say what you like, ask what you like. The power is yours. Ready?
Wow. Your questions are complicated today. I would say, you know what? I've always dreamt of the best country ever. And I believe we are in one of the most beautiful countries ever, which is my Lebanon, that is dear to my heart. And whatever I started in 2009 was a nightlife business, and I wanted to prove to the world that Lebanon does not sleep at six. And I always wanted to fight for Lebanon and show that this little hole in the wall has the best nightlife in the world, and it was proven and CNN wrote about it. And since 2009, ongoing problems and problems and problems, and you'd look back and say 7,000 years of issues and 7,000 years of problems and civilizations and wars, and Beirut was destructed 8 times. When is it enough to stop? So on a white ball that is white, I would definitely ask for peace for our kids, for our legacy, for whatever this country is enduring. 20 million around the world when they could have been living in Lebanon. What did we give the world, and what did the world give us back? What is making what Lebanon is, and why are we fighting for everything? And why are the neighbors fighting for that country? All the problems of the Middle East are settled in Lebanon, and everything's in Lebanon. And then we were brought in war times, and now my kids and my parents before and my grandparents before. When is it time to stop? And that question is, when is it time for you to leave or not? And that's the dilemma today. Should I leave? Should I stay? Should I help my country in better ways outside of it or inside it? Should I be in and fight inside? Should I be out and fight for it outside? And I believe that is the question every single Lebanese will ask himself every day. If I left, did I do it for the right reasons? If I stay, did I do it for the right reasons? And I'll keep this unanswered.
Amazing. I love that. Well, I'm very glad that you came here to be part of the show. Really, thank you so much, Anthony, for everything that you've done for the country. Love what you're doing on your shows. Love your energy. Love your positivity. I would love to have you back one day in the future. Okay. And remember, you have to come to Raskifa. Huh? The mediocre Adak is waiting for you.
Your wife's dinner.
Yeah, wife's dinner as well. Wife's dinner. On that note, thanks for watching. Please like, subscribe, and share. And see you soon on the Inside Track. Smile.
Neu in der Deutschlandcard-App. Sammle Punkte mit deinen Kassenbons von DM, Rossmann und vielen weiteren Supermärkten und Drogerien. Einfach Kassenbons scannen, punkten und sparen. Jetzt gratis mit der Deutschlandcard-App.